Last time we had started the first chapter, we'd asked, had some problems with the Mishnah in Sefer HaHimud Nida. We said that Mishnah can be understood by focusing on five categories mentioned in Talmud. Five categories are Tzaddik who prospers, Tzaddik who doesn't prosper, a Rasha who prospers, a Rasha who doesn't prosper, and a Benini. Benini meaning an intermediate person. We define that a little bit. We said a Tzaddik who prospers is not a, it's not, is it the Tzaddik Gomer, perfect Tzaddik. As the Gemara says, why does he prosper? Because he's good, through and through. So he's got no bad that's got to be washed away and purified through suffering. So he prospers. Then we said, the Tzaddik doesn't prosper. He still has tinges of bad. We'll get to exactly what they are in chapter 11, in chapter 10. He has a little bit of suffering. He doesn't prosper because he's got to get rid of the bad. That's the Gemara. The Gemara. Then the other brings the Zohar. The Zohar says, "Well, what do we mean? We mean the Ra Lo." He doesn't prosper. Well, it doesn't mean ra means evil also. Vara lo, that the evil is controlled by him. He even though he has a drop of evil in him, he rules over it. Then we say there's a rasha who prospers. The Mara says, why does he prosper? But because he's got a little bit of good, so he gets reward for his good in this world. So next world, well, they won't have to worry about giving reward for it. And then there's a Rasha who doesn't prosper, a complete Rasha. He gets problems in this world and the next world. So this has got no good period. Then there's a Beinoni. What is the Beinoni? So he says, does it ever brings down in Brachos, so Peretes, at the end of conclusion chapter 9 in Brachos. The Gemara says the tzaddik, the Eitz Tov is what rules. And even a tzaddik who's not a perfect tzaddik, a tzaddik v'ralo, what rules, what defines his behavior is Eitz Tov. A rasha, what defines his behavior? The Eitz Hara. A Beinoni, it says, this and this, both the Eitz Tov and the Eitz Hara rule. He's got two judges. Then we go into the statement, which is the springboard for the next little bit, and really for a lot of the book. Rava says, you want to see a Beinoni? Look at me, I'm a Beinoni. And the student, Dabai, says, Master, if you're a Beinoni, there's no one else deserves to live. Everybody else is wicked. Wicked are all dead. Well, if you're a Beinoni, there's not 36 tzaddikim in the world. The world won't exist. Yes, so we have to understand that. We also have to understand, it says based on Iyub, Gemara tells us, Barak, tzaddikim, Barak, Rishoyim, created the righteous, he created the wicked. And that's the difficult thing when God created somebody righteous. Every person has free choice. Free choice is the fundamental principle of the Torah. There was no free choice, then what are we doing this whole thing for? We're just robots. We're doing what's been decreed by fate that we're going to do. No sense of reward and punishment. The whole thing is just a game. And it gets, you know, also, you know, what is this Beinoni? The rabbi is saying that he's a Beinoni. That's difficult to understand. Why is it difficult?
Because no one else is on his level, and therefore.
Yeah, okay, so he made a mistake. But why is it difficult for us to say that he could even make such a mistake?
Because he never sinned.
Yeah. Or let's put it this way. They never, he learned, what's the standard definition of a Beinoni?
Thought speech and action, never.
Half and half. What does Rabbi, we say, everything is there, lo posa kuma megirsa. He was studying the whole time. And none of that, his study was so holy, that the angel of death couldn't touch him. It wasn't, like some people could be studying the whole time, and it's all, you know, tinged with gaiva, with pride, with selfishness, so that the study isn't holy. His study was so holy, the angel of death couldn't touch him. And still, he says, I'm a Beinoni. So, could a Beinoni be half and half? That's the ultimate question. We have to get a definition of a Beinoni that would allow Rava to make a mistake and say, I'm a Beinoni. Furthermore, that's where we finished. Let's take a drop, let's go a drop further. The other Rebbe continues saying, if a person sins, when a person sins, he's wicked. It's not a question of maybe he sinned. He says, no, if a person sins against God, that's a wicked act. And a person is for that moment called wicked. And afterwards, he'll do tshuva. He's called righteous. But at the moment he's sinning, the person sins consciously against God, that's wicked. And that isn't just, you know, a sin of that scriptural analogy. It says, even if a person violates only what's seemingly a light rabbinic commandment, he's called a rasha. Now this is like a very, you know, interesting thing. I mean, like, the other thing, I remember that, I forget who it was, one guy I know, he teaches at in Hanok, they have all kinds. Yeah. And so, one of the guys in Rosh Hashanah, he's an American guy, teaches at a certain yeshiva. And he says, one of the most important things I feel that people have to know is what's a bialaisa, what's a derabanan, what's a minhag. And a person knows the varying levels of severity of Torah law, then he knows how to balance himself. Okay, I don't like to argue with people in general. Like that isn't my tendency. Like some people get a kick out of it. I don't really. I lost that about age 20 or so. I think, okay. But I did sound like this. So what? Why? If it's all Torah, and you can't be over even on a minhag Yisrael Torah, so what difference does it mean if I know it's divine? Oh, just have to know so he's like, oh, I'm answering me Talmudically already. You have to know that a divisor supersedes a rabbanon, a rabbanon supersedes a minhag. Yeah, okay, stay. You're right. That's true. That's important. But personally, I kind of like it when somebody is machmir And the tiniest minhag, because it's Torah. It's only a tiny minhag. It was misgadesh, you know, by the Gaonim in the Dor HaAchron. It was established by sages of a couple of generations ago. It's not the Talmud. It's definitely not in Scripture. But it's Torah. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. And you keep it because it's Torah. He looks at me like, you know, cool. You know, like, where are you coming from, sir? Yeah. No. Is it? Do you have to keep that minhag? Of course. Minhag. But not with the. Is that minhag Torah? Yes. Okay. End of subject. And like he, and then he was kind of cracking, you know, like these doctors have strange views. We didn't go much past that. And I wasn't going to press my point that way on him because, okay, you know, I don't like to get into arguments. But it was an interesting thing. Know the gradations of Torah law. And, you know, yes, that it is important. Like I said, you have to know when that the arises and supersedes the rabbanan, something which is scriptural, has more precedence, or which is rabbinic, so you have to know how to weigh that. But that's technical. You gotta know. Minhag Yisrael, Torah, who even a Jewish custom is Torah, and you know, and every little thing is something that's important. That's what that is here, is bringing out here. Even if you're over and under a bonan, it's a Russia. It's wicked. It's not Torah.
I've always had a question. All these definitions, are they mamayla mata or mamata mamayla? Not mamayla, just like from our perspective or from God's perspective of who's a Russian, who's a tzaddik, or who.
I don't quite get what you mean. If we're talking about God judging a person, so we'll get into that shortly.
Right, it says later that it actually is like how
in terms of judgment is a different scale. Here we're talking about an honest look at yourself. It's a word which I repeat often. Siddim don't need musa swearing. You don't need books to tell you an ethics. So just look in the mirror. What the Altarebbe is doing for you here, look in the mirror. If you're willing to violate anything, even a small, tiny thing, you're willing to violate it, you've gone against God and Torah. You know, as we spoke before, when we speak about the short path, at that moment, how much difference is there between the person who is not waiting 6 hours and a person who served consciously and a person who served another God? Oh, what are you talking about? That's the arisen, that's the biggest one. Why are you not waiting 6 hours? Because I want to do what I want to do and I don't care about the fact that this is Torah. Okay. That's what the difference once I boiled it down to the core, what difference is there between that and serving another God? Okay, it's not so severe. You won't burn as much in hell. Who cares about your burning? We're not caring about your burning. We're caring about what are you at that moment. At that moment, the person who's, I've waited 5 hours and a half. That's enough for me. He's serving another God. He's a Rasha. Simply. You know, look at others saying that. Oh, you know, he's got a Gemara, he's got two Gemaras to back him. But he doesn't need two Gemaras to back him. It's like, if you just look at what's happening there, then that's what it is. You're against him at that moment.
If I could clarify my question, I think it's what I'm saying. I think is like it can't be that like I'm going to consider someone like For example, if I see someone, right, or even myself, and by the way, this also applies to Eiver Vishagad.
No,
okay.
That's amazing.
No, but so I'm saying, like, if you see someone who, I guess it doesn't make, if you see someone who puts on the wrong shoe first, like a falafel and shulchan aruch, I'm not going to look at him and say, this guy's wicked. Like, you have to be a very high level.
If he's consciously putting on the wrong shoe first, then, he's wicked, but then, hey, the person is not doing what Torah says, consciously.
Right.
Think about that for a second. Let's go further and get stuck here. But through initiation, you have to quote the Enomotha, even if a person sees somebody else sinning and doesn't rebuke him, even such a person, Nikra Rosh, is called a Rosh. Again, be very careful about that one. It sometimes gets out of hand. Knowing how to rebuke somebody is a skill and a craft. And until you've learned it, tread lightly here. Okay. Of course, chemical the home about the Mr. Sasi Shekhala Sosa, so initial Kaimo commercial Misha Shekhala Sosa, the Carbano, sexual, the Shu Dal, Rosh and Bizar, Kreis. To the Nicaragua, it's fairly over the Rabbanan. How much more so does this apply to someone who has a positive commandment which he doesn't fulfill? For example, a person who could have studied Torah and didn't study. About such a person, the Torah says, he scorned the word of God. Hakares tikares, so his soul will be cut off. Well, if we're saying that about him, He's surely as much as a Rasha as someone who violates a rabbinic commandment. In other words, what did we just say? We just look at it. Not to be called a Rasha, you've got to be careful in all negative things. Not violating even a rabbinic commandment. You've got to be careful doing every positive commandment that you can be fulfilling, including studying Torah the whole time. The Beinoni doesn't even have the sin of negating Torah study. For this reason, Rava made the mistake and said that he was a Beinoni. In other words, once I start to define that a Beinoni is not something to do with actions, but something to do with what's happening inside, that both Bain and Tzaddik are perfect in their conduct. And the difference between them is only inside the heart. Now I can understand why Rabbi made a mistake. Rabbi was a Tzaddik. But in his modesty, and in chapter 13 we'll explain that in detail, in his modesty, looked at himself as a Beinoni. Because deed was the same. The Rosh, the Tzaddik, and the Beinoni are equal in deed. The difference between them is only in what goes on in the heart. Okay. I think he was listening last week. Monday, 3 days ago. Well, what is else that I'm trying to pull off by this? And I remember I talked this once, and the guy says, okay, I don't understand you. Before I thought, I'm never going to be a tzaddik, but I could be a Beinoni. Now I say I can't even be a Beinoni. Is that what the other wanted to teach me?
No. The checks and acts system.
What?
The system checks and acts system.
What do you mean?
That I've done this and this. It's all quantitative.
Yeah. Got one person. he was the second time he knew. But yeah. you have to have this taken us out of kindergarten. When, in other words, we're not only speaking about Tzadik, Rasha, and Beinoni. We're speaking about our that things have to do with Avodas Hashem. Inner Avoda. You're not just, oh, my deeds are okay. You've got to go much deeper than that. You guys with me? Okay, we said this last time. I'm going to go over it again, but in detail. That was, you know, that's the point he's up to bringing up. Okay, let's take the draft further. Now, Yotadab has a problem. He's defined the Beinoni as someone who's perfect indeed. But what does the Gemara say? It's half and half. Yotadab has sufficient proof that it can't be half and half. But he's got to answer the Gemara. That's what starts to know. That's what it says in the Gemara. That a person who has a majority of merits is called a tzaddik. And what's implied is that he has merits and some sins. And someone's half and half is called a beinoni. We just said that even a beinoni is perfect indeed, and the Gemara is implying that of course that a beinoni is definitely not perfect indeed. Even tzaddik isn't perfect indeed. So how does that fit with what we just said before? So it says hushem musha linyan sfar ba'onish. This is a borrowed term, a figurative analogy. In other words, when I'm speaking about sfar bonus, reward and punishment, I have to say, hey, I'm weighing the scales. He wins. Nikwa tzadik vadino. He's called a tzadik with regards to his judgment. Now, in judging him, you know, when God is starting to judge, he uses the term tzaddik in Russia when a person has a greater weight of good deeds and a greater weight of bad deeds. Now, when I say greater weight, it's not only quantitative. It's a Rambam in Perikim of Hilchos Tshuva. I actually just heard, today I was listening to a beautiful sikh from the Rebbe on this. The Rebbe says, you're going to judge a person? Lo machshavah sayah, machshavah seichem. God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. You think you can look at him and say what he is? Who are you to think that you can judge him, that you can understand the totality of a person, what he went through, what his background is, how many challenges he had to overcome to get to where he is in his devotion to Hashem, even if he's on a seemingly low level. If you look at what he got and what he had to go through to get there, you'd be bowing your head in submission and in awe of his ability. Such a beautiful sikha that Rebbe was talking. You know, you speak, apparently, I don't know the exact details, but somebody had criticized non-observant people, saying, who are you to criticize? Had you faced the challenges, where would you be? So, you know, it's also Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, chapter 3. Rambam says, the judging is according to the day of the knowledge of the true judge, and only he can judge in that way. So even quantitative, even here, it's not a quantitative scale entirely. You know, like Judaism is never in kindergarten. But, you know, we're even going beyond first grade. Okay, but that's what we're saying. Tzaddik and Rasha are borrowed terms when it comes to judgment. Avon yinimit, the shema tova, mayalash, the mouse madrega, skulka, tzaddik, when I try to want to give a true definition, a real description of what is a tzaddik and what is a rosh and what is a benmi. This, as Ashi said, tzaddikim yetzotov yetzishov tov tzom. Ashi just said, a tzaddik. Who's a tzaddik? Someone who's yetzotov tov rules. What do you mean is yetzotov rules? You know, my libi chel b'kirbi. My heart is empty in my midst. This heart refers to his yetzahara. King David is saying, I don't have the yetzahara anymore. Why? He killed it through fasting. And he doesn't hear the voice of his yetzahara. He had, King David, after the whole story of Bathsheba, was totally broken up. And he worked on himself to the point where he didn't hear his yetzahara anymore. Libi chil b'kirbi, my heart is empty in my midst. And there's nothing there. Avakor mishlo higri madrega zu. And anyone who hasn't reached this level, who could still hear the voice of his yetzahara, even though his merits are greater than his sins, he's not on the level of the tzaddik at all. Therefore, our sages said in the Medrash, God saw that there were a few tzaddikim, therefore, he stood and he planted them in every generation. As it says, a tzaddik is the foundation of the world. Okay, now, again, I'm going to depart from traditional Lubavitch custom. Here all the Lubavitches will tell you, I'm going to tell you how the tzaddik, how the one tzaddik is the foundation of the world. Now, that's also, most of the drushas are also true, by the way. I mean, but that's totally out of place here. You know, those drushas have some place in the second chapter, and we'll get there. But, like, it's not, here he's just saying, he's giving the proof. There are very few tzaddikim. I mean, what's the proof that there are very few tzaddikim? A tzaddik is a very high level. He's a person who Yetzirah doesn't have a voice. Hey, there aren't too many people like that. Hey, you're right. Of course there aren't too many people like that. It says in the Medrash that God saw there weren't too many people like that, and so he picked them up and implanted them in every generation. And even further, it says, the tzaddik, one tzaddik, is the foundation of the world. That means there's only one of them like that, really, in every generation. That's all it's saying. Yeah. Everyone which they'll tell you, these little drushes, the tzaddik, he said, they're all true. But we ain't going to go there because that's not the context here. The point here is that there's one. That's the point that I've been saying. Okay, so he's now clarified. Now I'm going to go a step further. He's now clarified a whole bunch of issues. Now he says, okay, to understand this. So to understand what we mean by these, that tzaddik is only Yetzer Tov is heard. A Beinoni has both of them. Them happening, and he's still perfect in action. To understand this, we've got to go a little bit deeper. Let's focus on the makeup of the human personality. Let's see what he says here. Akbir, Minyan, the explanation of the concepts of Pimash Kosovo Rufayim Vital Vashar Akdusha, Reskayim, Shanun Perek Beis, the call Yishisro, there, the Rufayim Vital was one of the disciples of the Arizal. The Arizal didn't write anything. There's no books written by the Arizal. Now you see the expression "history Arizal," the writings of the Arizal. That's really a misnomer. They're written by his students, and mostly by Rav Chaim Vital. So there, Rav Chaim Vital says, "The Kol Ish Yisrael, every Jewish man, Echad Tzaddik, Tzad Rasha, every whether he be a Tzaddik or a Rasha, Yesh Bo Shtei Nefashos. He has two souls." As it's written, I made souls. the two terms for soul, nefesh and neshama, there's a third one, ruach. We'll explain them some other time. It's not relevant here. Nefesh echad mitzad klipa v'sitra achra. One of them comes from klipa and sitra achra. These terms, the Alter Rebbe is going to define in chapter 6 a little bit in detail, but they're the Hasidic terms generally when we want to get fancy and diplomatically correct, we call it the unholy side of the universe, the spirit, the unholy side of the spiritual cosmos. And basically it's talking about evil, but it's not evil in it. But the terms really show us what we mean here, because it doesn't mean evil in a sense. What's klipa? Klipa means the shell, the husk. Anything wrong with a shell? No, a fruit needs a shell. What's the problem? When you mistake the shell for the fruit. I mean, that's the problem. But the actual idea of a shell is a good thing. It protects the fruit. But it's only the shell. So that's the concept of klipa in its fullest sense. The shell. In every material entity, there's a spiritual purpose, intent, spark. And it's covered by a material shell. So some people look at the shell, and that's what they get all turned on by. That's where all their energies run. Hey, I got to eat this. I got to play with this. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. It's all a shell. That's bad. I'm bad. As a matter of fact, that's the next point. Sitra acha. Sitra acha means the other side. Something which isn't holy. Doesn't mean bad. And that's what we're going to get into here in just a second. The Alter Rebbe calls this nefesh bahamis, the animal soul. Now, usually in Torah Judaism, we've all heard the term yetzer hara, evil inclination. There's a big difference between animal soul and evil inclination. Even the way they sound, evil inclination sounds pretty bad. It's sinister. It's the guy with the pitchfork there. Animal soul. I grew up with a dog. He was my best friend. As a man's best friend, is this thing? Not bad. It was actually a nice little dog. What's the book? What did my dog do? He ate, slept, chased his tail. he'd run and catch a ball and bring it back to me. Didn't do much more. I don't think he ever studied his stomach well. Or even the Gemara. Or even thought much more than eating, sleeping, and catching the ball and doing other, basic physical things. That's an animal soul. You want to live life, eat a little bit, drink a little bit, fool around a little bit, chase your tail some, chase some of the other tails, some other tails. You want to get, you just fool around, living for yourself, carrying out some basic physical deeds. Is that bad? No, it's not Yetzer Hara. It's an animal soul. We spent close to 2 years in Cape Town, South Africa. Cape Town is really a beautiful city. It's probably, probably the most beautiful. My wife says Sydney is nicer. No, I don't know. I never was in Sydney. Sydney's nice. Okay, whatever it is. They're both nice cities. Cape Town, and Sunday, what do you do in Cape Town Sunday afternoon? Take your family, a little bit of wood, a little bit of meat. You go out, you make a barbecue on a beach or a mountain, because the whole place is full of beach and mountains, and both of them together sometimes. And, you know, you take your family, and you have them. In America, we call it a barbecue. There, they call it a braai. And, you know, it is just like a pleasant time. Now, is there anything wrong with that? Is that Yetzer Hara? It's kosher meat. We use kosher meat. We made a bracha before, a bracha afterwards. Oh, yeah, there's no Yetzer Hara there. Is it Nefesh Bahamas? It sure can be. You know, it doesn't have to be either, by the way. You know, that's part of the trick of it. But it sure can be Nefesh Bahamas. No different than the little dog I grew up with. Taking care of your physical desires, doing what comes naturally. What you want to do? Bad? No, it's not bad. But Nefesh Bahamas. That's one soul comes from this Klip and Sefer Achra. And it encloses itself in the flesh of a person to make his body alive. If, as we said last week, that idea of going beyond checks and X's was a bombshell, a new concept in Torah literature, we just hit another one. In other words, what did I just say before? We're not Yetzer Hara. In other words, previously in Torah literature, there was mitzvahs, you know, mitzvahs, commandments you're supposed to fulfill, averus, sins, transgressions, things you can't do, and then a whole category called reshus, permitted things. And basically, the idea was, as long as you're not a selfish pig, you can do all the reshus you want, and it's okay. It's not mitzvahs, but go ahead, do what you want. What did the author ever just say? And we'll get into this further in chapter 6, but it's already here right at the beginning. What did he just say?
Things that aren't godly are actually, like, they're not, I don't know,
they're klipa.
They're klipa, right? They're not.
They're the shell. Shell isn't bad, but it's only a shell. It's got to be, you got to focus on the fruit.
Then you also have to eradicate klipa and sitra achra?
Depends. Klipa, shloshim is tmeis, yes. Klipa is noga, no. Klipa is noga, you have to use kedusha. That's chapter 6 already. Mm-hmm. But you just said it right. In other words, you're a nice guy. You didn't do anything bad. You invited me over for a barbecue. That still could be all klipa and sitra achra. This idea of reshus, that I'm okay, like there's things I do for God, things that I can't do because that's against Him, but then there's my area. And like, come on, God, don't infringe on my rights. I got, and you hear that almost. You know, there's things you must do, things you can't do, and then there's your own playground. And here the other says, no, you don't have that. The first nature, the first dimension, this animal soul, is that you're just living. That's klipa. It's a shell. It's not bad, as we're going to see again in chapter 6, that you can elevate it. You've got to realize that no, it's something that has to be elevated. It's not good and complete in and of itself. And that is almost as big a bombshell as the point we had last week about not checks and exits.